Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Turn up your volume. Because you're about to listen to The Sick Podcast. The Sick Podcast. With Tony Marinaro.
55 seconds left in the penalty, a minute and 27 seconds left in regulation time. Boston 4, Montreal 3. Lafleur coming out rather gingerly on the right side. He gives it into Lemaire, back to Lafleur. Oh!
The Sickest Montreal Canadiens Podcast.
You're in the bomb!
Sports entertainment like no other.
Rejoint, on lui fait perdre la rondelle, une passe devant. Et c'est la
bonne!
Et ce sera la victoire des Canadiens. Condamné pour les Canadiens. Le 23e de l'histoire.
You found the dogs! John, you found the dogs! He found the dogs!
And all together, they worked a young team to the top. And now, a 24th Stanley Cup banner will hang from the rafters of the famous Forum in Montreal. The Canadiens win the Stanley Cup!
Brought to you by Energy Transportation Group. Driven to be different. LaBee.TV. Embrace your true nature. And Playground. Your premier gaming destination. It's gonna be sick.
Marinaro on this Tuesday, March 12th. It is 10:06 p.m. The Montreal Canadiens and Caden Primo shut out the Columbus Blue Jackets by a score of 3-0 in Primo's first game since going from a three-goalie system to a two-goalie system this season. How did Caden Primo do tonight for the Montreal Canadiens? He didn't stop 10. He didn't stop 20. He didn't stop 30. He didn't stop 40. He stopped 41 and almost made history in the process. As a matter of fact, he's in some pretty good company. When I show you some stats that I found out tonight, you are going to absolutely freak out. Some of you are going to say it's the Columbus Blue Jackets, and I get it. They're not exactly playing the Soviet Union or weren't playing them earlier this evening, but if Caden Primo doesn't play the way he played, Montreal Canadiens don't win this hockey game. As a matter of fact, who knows what would have happened if Samuel Montembeau would have played in this game as good as Montembeau has been for the past couple of years. We have so much time to talk about it, and we will with former Montreal Canadian Maxime Lapierre of La Poche Bleue, who's standing by. He's going to be on my podcast tonight. I'm going to be on his podcast, La Poche Bleue's Taverne Hockey segment, tomorrow night. The Sick Podcast brought to you in part by Energy Transportation Group, a leading full-service logistics provider serving all of North America. They are driven to be different. Also brought to you in part by those guys right over there, LaBitTB. They used to be brewed in Abitibi, but now they are brewed in Laval at the Geloso Beverage Group. They're brewed in Quebec and whenever it does international awards. LaBitTB offers quality microbrewery beers made with premium ingredients for everyone's taste. LaBitTB, embrace your true nature. Also brought to you in part by Playground. Yeah, that's right, Playground. The World Series of Poker returns to Playground. 15 circuit events with over $3.3 million in guarantees. That's almost as much as Max LaPierre got for his share when he sold his podcast. Actually, he got more, including a $1.5 million guaranteed main event, the WSOPC Playground from April 8th to April 23rd is the poker event of the season. Visit playground.ca for more details. And also brought to you in part by Accent Insurance Solutions. You know by now that all insurance isn't created equal. And you know by now, where to find the right solution for you. Where? I'll tell you where. Accent Insurance. Accent Assurance. Accent doesn't sell insurance. They shop insurance for you to find the right product right on the money. Whatever your insurance needs, home, automobile, or business, call the Accent team today at 514-363-3636. Without further ado, let's bring him in from La Poche Bleue, former Montreal Canadian, Maxime Lapierre. Comment ça va?
Salut, mon ami.
You didn't get me one of those hoodies yet, eh?
Still waiting for mine from the Sick Podcast. Should be
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right.
So that's how it works at La Poche Bleue, no? We just trade stuff.
I'll get you one. You guys sure you have double XL in stock?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I mean, no, you said it.
you were going to say it. No, I'm a lot bigger than him. Let's be honest. But he's thick. No. He's not that. He's a thick guy.
He's solid. He's solid.
Yeah, he's solid. All right. Okay. You know what was solid? Caden Primo was solid. Now, I got to tell you, I heard a lot of stupidities in the last year. I never could understand those who were like, oh, okay, just put Primo on waivers. You're going to end the three-goalie system. Yeah, but if you put him on waivers, another team's going to pick him up. That's why Kent Hughes didn't do it, because another team's going to pick him up. Yeah, but maybe not. Just do it. No, why? Why would you take a chance? He's still young. He's the youngest one of them all. He makes the least money. He's nowhere near his prime. We don't know what his ceiling yet is yet. No, keep it up. Okay, well, no, just. This is why I didn't want to get rid of Caden Primo for nothing. This is why I didn't want to send them on waivers. And by the way, I'm not patting myself on the back for this. For me, it was logical. The Canadians are in a rebuild. You keep the youngest one making the least money. You get rid of the oldest one making the most money. That's what happened officially on Friday afternoon. And Caden Primo tonight feels like the weight of the world just got off of his shoulders. He's playing free. He was really good.
Yeah, you're so right, because this year we had time to keep him, you know? Like, I know it was tough for the three goaltenders and all that, but we had time to test him, and we didn't want to lose him for free. We had room on the salary cap, you know? So it wasn't like there's no emergency here. We take our time. We're testing him. I'll be honest. For me, like, September, October, November, December, I was like, I don't get it. I don't understand why. I don't even think he would get picked up on waivers, because I wasn't seeing it in that, like, not in stats, but in the way he was moving. You know, he looked really small in net. He looked off. Like, I'm not a goalie specialist. I'm not going to pretend I'm a goalie specialist, but he didn't look big in net. And now he's starting to look bigger in net. And he looks solid tonight. I don't care about the shutout, but he looked solid like a few games ago. And since 2 months now, he looks solid and he's going in the right direction. I mean, he's 24 years old. Right now, we have time. We're in a rebuild. I think for him, the big, big thing is going to be when we're in 3 years, let's say, we're ready to win, then what? You know, then what? Is he going to be second goalie? Is he going to be traded because we need a first goalie if Montembeau is not where we want him to be in 3 years? So I think now he can work freely for 2 years. That's how I see him.
Yeah, look, Max, Montembeau obviously has been the Canadiens' number one goaltender this year and last year. But let's not forget where he came from. When the Canadiens picked him up on waivers, and I know that Florida told everyone at the time, look, he's a good goalie. You know, Roberto Luongo tells you a goalie's a good goalie. You're going to believe him. But at the same time, yeah, you know, you say to yourself, what are they going to say when they end up losing a player, right? They're not going to openly say he's not good. The first couple of times I saw him, and I'm no goalie expert either, so I'll say that, I didn't think he was NHL material. And he came a long way. He proved a lot of people wrong. I think the level that Montembeau has played at in the last couple of years, there's not too many people that expected that. So this is what I'm getting at. Who's to say that Primo can't do what Montembeau's been doing for the last 10 years in 2 years from now? Who's to say that Caden Primo next year will not have a similar season that Montembeau had last year, and the year after that, have a similar season that Montembeau is having this year? Who's to say? Could very well be.
Yeah.
Who's to say that in 3 years from now, Caden Primo won't be the number one goalie on this team?
You never know. you never know. You got to trust the process. I know I'm reading right now. Somebody doesn't like that we're projecting, but that's what professionals do. They do projection. That's what you need to do because you're drafting. You're drafting players. You got to know what you cannot know what he's going to be tomorrow. You got to project what is the best version of himself is going to be, and then you go from there. And if in 2 years it doesn't work, next. You know, it's that simple. Felt bad tonight, Tony, for my good friend on the other side, though, Elvis. Elvis had a tough night.
Had a tough night, and the Canadians got to him. They got to him early, and they got to him often. As a matter of fact, why don't we bring up the lineups right away if we can?
You know he was my teammate, right?
You know what? I didn't know he was your teammate, and the second you said, I feel bad for my friend, at that point I said, geez, they must have played together.
Yeah, played in Lugano, Switzerland. Young guy coming in, good goaltender.
Lugano, Switzerland, really?
Yeah, he was our goalie for a few years. Good guy, good player. I actually, that's one goalie I would take a risk on. Not in Montreal, but if I was another NHL team, he's a good goalie. He wants to compete, and I don't think Columbus is a good market for him.
Have you and he stayed in touch?
Yeah, of course. We text often. Like, he came in and Lugano was a young guy. Obviously, I tried to help him as much as I could to become a professional. And sometimes when he has a tough time, I get the little text and I just say the same thing. Same thing I've been telling him since he's really young. And he's always laughing. Just stop the fucking puck. I love it because, you know, young guys, they text you like how they feel. And hey, just stop the fucking puck. That's your job.
I love Lugano, by the way. I had a chance to visit for 3 days back in 2010. Wow. It's a beautiful spot. I mean, some of the scenery is absolutely fantastic. The mountains and everything. Phenomenal. It's absolutely gorgeous. I think what kind of left a sour taste in my mouth was we went into a fast burger joint. It's a very popular one with an M on it. I'm not going to say the name, but if they want to sponsor the podcast and give us $100,000, I'll say their name as many times as they want. But anyway, here's the deal. So I walked in and, you know, we had four little meals. And back then it was 75 Swiss francs, which I think was about the same as the Canadian dollar or something like that. But it was a pretty expensive fast food, let me tell you.
Welcome in Switzerland.
My wife is in Geneva right now as we speak.
Great spot too. Really great spot.
Yeah. Do you like it? Yeah. She's on a connecting flight. So she spent the whole day there today. And so she liked it. But mind you, she said a lot of the places were closing early. Okay. We're getting off track. You know what? I think this is an idea for a podcast where we're going to talk about different cities, different countries, a little bit of tourism. Max, who knows? You know what? I've always wanted to do something else in life. All right. All kidding aside. let's talk about the lineups. Let's get to them. All right, Suzuki with Slafkovský on his right, Caulfield on his left, Newhook with Armia on his right, Roy on his left, Evans with Anderson on his right, Gallagher on his left, RHP with Pearson on his right, Pezzetta on his left, Matheson, Gouley, Jacki, Savard, Struble, Kovacevic, and Caden Primo in goal. For the Columbus Blue Jackets, it is Goudreau, Jenner, Chinnikov, who left the game with an injury, by the way, Fix, Wolanski, Voronkov, and Marchenko. Teixeira, Sillinger, and Nylander, Meyer, Corrali, and Mathieu Olivier. That's a heavy fourth line, by the way, that finishes their checks. Werenski and Boqvist, Provorov and Severson, Bean and Gudbranson, and Elvis Merzlikens in goal once again. Scratches Anna Fantilli with a calf laceration, out for 6 weeks as of January 31st. Justin Danforth, concussion, out indefinitely, and also out Brendan Gaunce, injured reserve. Kent Janssen, a torn labrum in his left shoulder, out for the season. Let's get to the scoring. All the scoring came in period number one. Here it is. 21 seconds into the game, the Columbus Blue Jackets turn over the puck. It's picked off by Jake Evans, who backhands a pass to Brendan Gallagher, who redirects, and he scores. There's something that stood out to me on this play, and I was like, what's he doing there? Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, go ahead.
David Savard's the first guy in on the forecheck.
Oh,
what's going on over here?
He's happy he stayed in Montreal. That's what's going on.
He wanted to score a goal himself versus his former team?
of course, you always have that special feeling when you play against your old team. But I want to come back to Jake Evans. I think I really like his game the last 2 weeks. I think he's a good player. I think defensively he's strong. He's good on faceoffs this year. You know, like we're always so focused on the top two lines and your top two defensemen for the future. You need a third line center and you need a fourth line center and you need good role players. You know, like I think we've been through this before in one of the shows, but you need guys that are specialists and not just depth that are filling a, you know, or any role. Like you need a guy that is a good guy that grew with the leadership group, you know, because that is important. When you want to win, you want guys that know what it took to get there, how much work, how long the rebuild was, how many years we suffered and we're finally here. I like a guy like Jake Evans that is going to accept his role. He's going to be a good veteran. He's going to be a good leader and with guys that he knows perfectly. He knows where Caulfield, Slafkovský, Suzuki are coming from. He knows who they were year one and who they are now. I think it's really important to have those players on the team. And I hope that we spend as much time on Evans as we spend on top line players, you know, because these guys are very important. Because it's going to happen. You're going to be in a conference final, and the guy you need in game seven, overtime, you need a big face-off. Jake Evans, you know, those guys are important. So I hope we work well with him and we keep working and help him reach another level. I think he has it. And I'm not seeing it now, but he's going the right direction.
You know, it's.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Obviously, this subject is important to you because you yourself were a third slash fourth line player as well. So I can understand that if there's someone who knows the value in the work that they do. I don't want to take anything away from Evans. I totally agree with everything you just said, by the way, and he's been really good. But with Anderson playing on a line with Evans, when I see Evans playing so well and outplaying Anderson almost every game, it frustrates me even more, you know? Like, how can you be on a line with this guy and watch him outplay you like every single game? And it drives me crazy.
You know what? I'm going to ask you a question, and maybe I'm wrong because I'm pretty strict in the way I analyze a game. You know, sometimes it's a little more towards the negative side than the positive, but I think that's normal when you want to be critiqued. Like Josh Anderson, I always thought he was lost a little bit on the ice, and his hockey IQ is not up where I want it to be. But lately, is it me or he's slower than he used to? Like, I feel like he doesn't have the speed anymore. Like, he's not as explosive. He's not as fast as he used to be. Like, is it just me or?
So we're not seeing the speed, but for me with him, it's a light switch. You either turn it on or turn it off. And right now I find that the light switch is turned off. And when he decides to turn it on, I think you're going to see it again, but I'm seeing a player. And look, this could be wrong what I'm saying. All right. Because it's an outside perception. I hate to judge players' character because I mean,
look, we don't.
If you made it to the big league, you all have character. Okay, let's get that out of the way. But some have more than others. Some dig deeper than others. Some try more than others. And I think that Anderson right now is playing like a player who's got several years left on his contract on a team that's not going to make the playoffs, whose spot is not in danger. He'll have it next year, and he's not going to get pulled out of the lineup. And don't get me wrong. There's other players like Suzuki, who's also on a long-term deal. He brings it more often than not, almost all the time. Anderson is what he has been the last 4 years since he scored those 27 goals in Columbus. He's I'll show up one in every five. So
that's
the only bad part is I don't remember when was the last time he had a good game.
You know, because like I was thinking about that because you look on the other side, a guy like Gallagher, we all know we're stuck with his contract. He's not the player he used to be. But I cannot even say anything because I know he's giving his best. Like, he built his reputation, and I'm 100% sure that he's giving everything he's got, every single presence on the ice. Like, and that bothers me. Like, you know, like, Anderson's got everything to have success. You know, just can you find something to do? Like, can the coaching staff work with him? Like, why? My question is more, why do we accept that? Like, I thought we were moving on from the past few years, you know. Like, for me, if you want to move
up, build a culture, right? They talked about a culture of a workers' culture.
Yeah, but then it's go time. Right now, it's go time, meaning take a decision. Take the big decision. Go sit, man. Because it's been twice this year that he has a phenomenal sequence where he's not even touching the puck twice. Then he had that moment where people were cheering for him because he was hitting posts, having scoring chance, and we were like, okay, poor guy. He has everything, and he's going to score at one point. That is not what's going on right now. That is not what's going on. Right now, I'm not seeing him. So do we accept that in the new culture, or we're sending a serious message?
Marty St. Louis has coached like a lot of coaches coach. Veterans, you tend to close your eyes every now and then when you wouldn't on a younger player or a player that doesn't have a lot of pull in the locker room. Yoel Armia didn't have a lot of pull in the locker room. He didn't at the beginning of the season. He doesn't now. They sent him to Laval twice. He's an easy guy to do it to. He's not the most popular guy. He's not the guy that has the most allies in the locker room.
He did fix his attitude. Marty said,
you know what? Armia's been good, man.
He did fix a little bit the way he behaves on the ice. I don't know him as a person, but tonight he blocked a shot. You know, he works hard a little bit on the PK. Like, he changed something. He changed something. I just think that we're there
now.
He doesn't
want to go back to Laval next year.
No, exactly. But we're there now as an organization, Tony. It's time to show that when you open that door to the Montreal Canadiens dressing room, this is not tolerated at all. Zero. Like, it's enough of the, he's a good guy, you know? You're a good guy, perfect. If you're that good of a guy, you're going to play hard for me because you have an impact on my career. Right? Pretty simple.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I hear you. Let's go back to goal number two now with Gallagher scoring goal number one. And the Canadians on a power play. If memory serves me well, Newhook and Suzuki, Caulfield, Slavkovsky, Matheson on the ice. I think it's Newhook that took the faceoff and won it clean. It went to Suzuki, who gave it to Slavkovsky, who gave it to Matheson, who gave Caulfield. It to Slavkovsky, back to Matheson, to Caulfield, back to Matheson, and the pass for Slavkovsky, a one-timer. It was a good shot. Personally, I think Elvis should have stopped it.
100%. But I just like that now he's taking the shot. That's the next step. You know, like first step this year, he wasn't shooting enough. Then he started to shoot. Now he's shooting one-timers, and the next thing you know, he's going to shoot great one-timers. And I think he's going in the right direction. I love that player, and I'm pretty sure he's hurt right now, like, because with all the practices he missed and the whatever. And so for me, that proves he's battling through something, and that's part of learning in the NHL. That's great. That's awesome. We're going in the right direction. Like, I'm looking at Newhook. I think he's impressive. I'm looking at Slavkovsky, Suzuki. Like, we're in business, guys. Like, be patient, but it's coming to an end, and we're going to have a good team for a few years.
We've talked about giving players an opportunity on the first wave of the power play, even though the power play has been going really well over the last month and a half, 2 months. And we talked about Joshua Roy, but I have to tell you, ever since Newhook got back into the lineup, coming back from that injury in which he was out, I don't know, 2.5 months or whatever it was, I don't know if it's him or the way they've actually formatted the power play and set it up, he has an ability to draw a lot of players to him.
Yeah, well, he's
in the... And open up seams for others. He's in the bumper.
He's the bumper. Yeah, and that is... You know what? A bumper is so important, Tony, because when you practice, that's... How could I say it? It's your safety net, you know?
Your safety net.
Yes. Your safety net. That is... The bumper is the play you're supposed to make without looking. because and that means you need a good bumper though, because he needs to be even with you and the puck. You know, he needs to be at the right place at the right moment, and you gotta trust him. So right now, this is what's going on. The guys are trusting that Newhook is gonna be there first. Well, the first thing is he's a very smart player, I think, and the second thing is he's fast, so he gets there on time, and that takes the pressure away, because the reaction is always pass to the bumper, boom, the PK ties up in the middle of the ice. Then it gives you the chance to restart the puck from Madison to Slafkovský, like you've seen tonight, right? The other thing is it takes away attention for the one-timer in the middle of the ice, which opens Slafkovský. I mean, TJ Oshie is a great hockey player, but the first reason why the Washington Capitals went and got TJ Oshie is to open up Ovechkin, because it was getting too obvious that the teams, they were just putting one guy on Ovechkin.
That Backstrom and Carlson were looking for him.
Yeah, they were ready to sacrifice another scoring opportunity to not have it on Ovechkin's side. Then they had TJ Oshie in the middle that scored a few goals at the beginning. Then teams were like, okay, now we need to pick, you know, like it's Ovechkin and Oshie. And I think it helped like big time with Ovechkin's situation. So it's the same thing right now. It's opening up. It's opening up Slafkovský. I think in the best situation, I would prefer if it was a righty at one point, which would be Kirby Doc next year. Because it does the same thing with, if you have Suzuki on the goal line, then you have a one-timer in the slot and you have Caulfield on the other side, you know?
So got it.
I would prefer this angle.
By the way, this is why Tampa Bay's power play has been good for so many years.
Brady,
you got
point.
Stamkos on one side. You got Kucherov on the other side. Both of them can give you one-timers. You got Braden Point in the bumper. You got Victor Hedman from the point. Whether it's Sergachev or they use another player, I mean, their power play is everything. By the way, Julien Brisebois earlier today on BPM Spot, I don't know if you heard it, saying that, you know, Mark Messier and Chris Chelios have gone on television to say that they think that Nikita Kucherov is the greatest power play player in the history of the National Hockey League. And he said, look, they've seen a lot of players play hockey, and Messi obviously played with Gretzky. And he says, I have to agree. He says, I think Kucherov's the best power play player in the history of the National Hockey League. That's a pretty big statement, by the way, by all three of them. He's great. He's unreal. That's a big statement, though.
He's a great player. I mean, yeah, that's a big statement. I don't like to compare players and eras. Like, you mean, you got Gretzky, you got McDavid, you got Crosby. So, yeah, he's just a great PP player. that's all I'm going to say.
I don't know if I buy it that he's a better power play player than Gretzky, but he obviously has a better shot, I think, and he uses really it a lot more. So he is really good. All right,
you know Tony, and that we've talked about that with the whole Burrow situation and all that, but this is exactly what I meant when these type of players that can pass and shoot, they freeze you as a PKer. You know, like when I was on the PK, you go and you get a guy, and you're in your head is he going to shoot or pass? You cannot react as fast as you're supposed to react. And if Caulfield starts to pass the puck that way and he shoots, then we're starting to have a thing. Slafkovský is becoming a good passer as well. You know, Suzuki can shoot the puck. So I think within the next 3 years, this power play is going to be deadly at one point.
You know what? I tend to agree with you. And when your power play becomes that deadly, you become a pretty dangerous team too. Let's go back to the score sheet for goal number three. And here you have it. It is... Newhook, the Jack guy, a shot from the point, deflected by Joshua Roy off the crossbar, banks off of Merz Lurkin's back, and then ends up going in the net. 5 minutes and 48 seconds in, the Canadians are up 3-0 on four shots, and Pascal Vincent pulls his goalie. I don't know if you had a chance to see it, but Elvis was staring at the bench for quite a while. And he obviously, I think he was embarrassed. He obviously didn't agree with the decision. Did you think it was the right decision to pull him that early on in the hockey game? It's 3-0.
I didn't like the Slafkovský goal, that's for sure. But I think the one with Jack Eye, with Roy right in front of him, this guy should have been boxed out. You know, he's not supposed to have a guy the size of what just standing there the way he wants. You know, like, so
he should have had one of three.
Yeah, I would have given him. I would have given him one more chance for one more goal. That's for sure. Not because I know him, but that's. I don't think the third goal was that bad.
Should have just called a timeout. Mind you, I don't have a problem with him pulling the goalie, but I mean, no, I'm just.
But that's to keep maybe him
you now know, that you told me he's your friend, you know.
No, but there's so other, many there's so many things, Tony. Like, it could just be to change the momentum, and sometimes it has nothing to do with the goals. There's a team there. We don't care about the guy in the net or your first center or fourth center or it's about the team.
22-8 were the shots on goal for Columbus in period number one. Let's bring up the actual shots and the stat line.
That is a problem. That is a problem. Because tonight, Tony, we won. It was a shutout. And I feel like we lost. That's how I felt. I didn't like the way. Yeah, there's good things. Obviously, there's always good things during a hockey game. But we need to fix that D zone. It's time to change something in a D zone. I'm the biggest fan of Marty St. Louis, but now I think it's time. It's time to find a solution for the D zone. You know why? It's not just because the goals against or the way it looks. It's because you can't produce offensively. Just see it that way. When you go on the ice as a player, it's like a cell phone battery, right? Okay. The first 20 seconds, you're in your max effort. Like, you can do whatever you want and think the way you want, because it's not foggy, because you're not tired and your heart rate is not high. So the first 20 seconds, this is where you need to create something, the momentum, and get momentum and a good feeling with the puck or something. Then your battery goes in the red, you know? Then it's too late to think about creating something. You need to start thinking about changing. So you're not managing the puck the same way if you're thinking about changing, right? Here in Montreal, most of the players, they start their presence on the ice with the 20 second in the dead zone. They're burning. Then they get the puck, they get out of the zone. What's your first idea when you get out of your zone finally? Put the puck deep and change. What happens after? You're late on the forecheck. You cannot create speed. You cannot create speed, get there, create a battle, and spend time in the offensive zone. What happens when you don't have speed on the forecheck? You cannot keep your momentum back-checking. So what happens when you can't back-check? You spend time in your zone. So then the second line, 20 seconds in your zone. You're chasing. You got to change. So we're not going to score goals, and we're not going to destroy a team like Columbus if we don't fix the D-zone. And it's not just about giving up goals. It's about creating offense.
They're playing man-to-man, Max. How many teams have played man-to-man over the last couple of years? It's outdated. They don't do it anymore. I don't know why they are, but
man-to-man.
I was talking to a former NHLer, if I can, Max, about a week ago, you know, off-the-record conversation, so I don't know if they would want me to make it public, so I won't give their name for now. But I was talking to a former NHL defenseman who said to me, man-to-man is the worst thing that you can play because, you know, all of a sudden – you know, another guy, well, one of the guys will say, well, I had my man, that was your man. And all of a sudden, you know what? Everyone just, it shows that they're not responsible for the goal going in or what happened, right? I had my man, you didn't have yours, it's your problem. So, well, it shouldn't be your problem. It should be a team thing. And as a team, you defend as a team, and you defend in a zone, right? And so why do you think they're playing man-to-man? Like, there's like,
I think
they're not stupid people, right? They're doing it for a reason. And are they doing it because they want to start here and then introduce something else? Are they doing it because they're experimenting? Why are they doing it?
My idea is, it is a simple system when you think that your team is going to have a lot of changes during the year. If you're going to have lots of trades or lots of young guys coming up, going down, coming back. So it's easy to just say it's man on man in our D zone. Because if you start every time there's a guy like Roy coming up and you're like, okay, this is how it's going to go, and you start teaching him for 30 minutes, it gets confusing. I get that point. You know, that would be the only way. Like, I don't see any other way to go. Man to man is a great system if you got Makar and McKinnon on the ice and you're like, be on your guy. Of course, they're gonna win their one-on-one battle, but man, the systems they were created to protect your weakest link, right? So if you have a player that's a little slower on the ice or doesn't read the game as well as anybody else, well, he's gonna be protected by the system. Then you can afford to put a unidimensional player on the ice because it doesn't matter if he makes a mistake because there's a safety net behind. So you can tolerate a guy that is just there to score goals, you know? But if you put that guy in a man-on-man system, he's going to be lost for sure.
Yeah. They're not a huge decor either, right? So if you play man-on-man, you're going to lose battles. Are you not?
Yes. Yes.
You know?
They're 100%. Not
they're, yeah.
But for me, it's just offensively, you cannot create anything. Because okay, I'll give you an example. Let's go through a situation. Let's say Slafkovský is following his demon in the corner, okay?
Yeah.
And then Caulfield follows a guy behind the net. How can you have a legit breakout with your forwards not in the right position? Right? Because if you get the puck back, it's not automatic when you look left or right that they're going to be in the spot they're supposed to be in because they follow a guy everywhere on the ice, right? So how can you have a great transition game that way? That's my point. Because as a center, when I used to play zone, let's say with Ken Hitchcock, as soon as I got the puck, I knew I had a guy on the wall and a guy in the middle and a defenseman on the other side if I was stuck. It was automatic. Now, you can't know because you don't know where the guy who he's following and where he is on the ice.
Yeah, no, I hear you. All right, okay. Caden Primo, I want to get back to him because he clearly is the story of the night.
Yeah.
By the way, it's two shutouts now and back in consecutive games at home. If you recall, back on Tuesday, was it February 13th? 5-0 win over Anaheim. He stopped 13 in a shutout.
Yeah.
So one day shy of a month or 1 month shy one day. Tuesday, March 12th tonight. 3-0 over Columbus. He makes 41 saves. He's in pretty elite company. Look at some of the things we're able to bring up here. Caden Primo. Guillaume Villemaire, by the way, who's the statistician for TVA Sport. Merci, Guillaume. Goalies 24 years and less of the Montreal Canadiens with two shutouts in a row at home. Caden Primo, Carey Price, Patrick Roy, Michel Larocque, Jerry McNeil. That's a pretty nice company.
Yeah, for sure.
There's more. Caden Primo came within one save of tying the Montreal Canadiens record for the most saves in a shutout at home, which belonged to Jacques Plante in 59 with 42 saves. José Théodore did it back in 2002 with 42 saves. And Carey Price in 2016 also with 42 saves. Price also had another shutout back in 2014 with also 41 saves. Wow, if you would have told me, and thank you, Guillaume, for getting us this. If you would have told me that the most saves a Montreal Canadiens goaltender would have made at home in a shutout would have been 42, I would have thought it was more than that.
Yeah, same. For sure. That's a big pretty performance. Yeah, he's you know what? Like when you look at his story, like the way it started in his career for Primo, like it at some point it reminds me a little bit of Jaro Halak, you know? He was that goaltender that didn't have the biggest stature in net, that wasn't the nicest to watch, and then he became solid and he had that right, you know, like the Halak he was just unreal. Like you never know. Like,
2010,
exactly. You know, so he's going to be a good goaltender if he keeps going that direction. But is he going to be a number one? That's way too early for me to say.
Jaro Halak, I'm going to bring it up right now if I can. Ninth round pick, 272nd overall in 2013. But a smaller goalie, 5'11". Caden Primo, 6'3" tall, much bigger goalie. But in 2017, seventh round pick, 199. You know, I find it unbelievable. that Caden Primo, and look, I don't know if his career is going to amount to anything spectacular or not, but when you have a goalie who's 6'3",
yeah,
who's from a hockey family, I find it unbelievable that he goes to the seventh round, 199. Isn't that something?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And like I said, you know, I'm starting to think right now that the full year with his NHL goalie coach really paid off, because he probably just worked on
1,000%.
He probably just worked on his technique since day one, and it shows. And I'm starting to realize it was a technical problem for him, because every time I was watching him in net and early in the season, I was like, what the heck is he doing? Like, he's not even touching his post when he's pushing on the side, you know, like he's not post to post. It was like diagonal. He wasn't set right. And now, obviously, I think he worked with a good goalie coach, and probably did in the past as well. But I think it just clicked, like just spending time, like working on your game. Hey, that at the end of the day, it's probably a good decision the organization took. It was tough. We had three goalies. Montabo got better. Primo got better. And we got rid of a guy for a third rounder, could become a second round pick. I think we did. Hughes did a really good job.
You know, like, once again, there's a lot of people in the province that thought that Hughes was crazy for the three-goalie system. In the end, what did it do? What did it do? They weren't going to make the playoffs anyway. By having Allen here, probably ended up getting Montembeau less money. Caden Primo was able to stay up the entire year and train and practice versus NHL players. And Jake Allen ends up fetching you a third-round pick by paying 50% of his salary, so that doesn't hurt you. No. I thought Hughes was genius. By the way, we should point out that the year that Primo was drafted, he was coming off a 30-start season with the Lincoln Stars and the USHL. His stats were not great, 316 goals against average, 895 save percentage. He gets drafted by the Canadiens, and the next 2 years in Northeastern, he puts up a 192 goals against average, 931 save percentage, 209 goals against average, 933 save percentage. So his numbers at Northeastern were absolutely unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
All right, okay. Since the All-Star game, the stats came up on RDS during the broadcast. I was very surprised to see these stats as well.
Yeah.
Goals scored 5v5. Mm-hmm. By a line since the All-Star game.
Yep.
Jenner, Roslovich, and Gaudreau leading the league. Suzuki, Caulfield, and Slafkovský second. So Jenner, Gaudreau, and Roslovich at 14 goals. Suzuki, Slafkovský, and Caulfield at 12. Erickson, Ek, Boldy, and Kaprizov at 12. McDavid, Hyman, and Draisaitl 10. McKinnon, Rantanen, and Lehkonen 10. Hintz, Robertson, Pavelski, 10.
Yeah.
Wow.
No, but you know, like even Columbus, like, these are great players. Like, Suzuki, Caulfield, Slafkovský are great players. Like, your first line in the NHL, man, you don't get there if you're not special. Like, you have to be unbelievable at hockey. you know, like, so right now for me, and hey, Suzuki's playing great. And Slafkovský is playing great. For me, this is why they're having success on the line. I'm sorry, but if you change Caulfield, I think these two are going to have the same success. I just think Caulfield became the complement on that line. And I know it's tough to hear, but I think right now it's Suzuki and Slafkovský's line with Caulfield, the finisher.
Are you saying that next season, for you, it's still up in the air that Cole Caulfield is going to be the player on that line?
I'm going to ask you this question, okay? Let's forget about the second, third, and fourth line, and let's just have fun for a second, okay?
Yeah.
Imagine Slafkovský on the left with Suzuki and Doc on the right. I know we have feelings for our players and we love them, but
I think it's a more complete line than what they have right now.
That's
it's bigger, it's stronger, it's tougher.
That's
and you have a second faceoff guy.
That's a heck of a line, Tony. That can help you out
with faceoffs. It's a heavier line and it's more of a playoff line.
Yeah, And I know, like, for the chat, I'm just playing right now. I know we need him at center, and we need a second line. But let's say
Hold on a second. What if you end up getting the fourth pick and you end up picking Caden Lindstrom?
Yeah,
who ends up becoming your number two centerman?
And I don't even like. Let's say Newhook keeps going the right direction, like with his speed and Caulfield. That could be a good duo. You know? That's why the other day I said we need to do tests. Like it's this time of the year. I would not be shy to try new things. You know.
Would you try Joshua Roy and Caulfield spot for a game or two?
Yeah. Yeah. Why not? What do we have to lose? Like
nothing.
The other day I was talking with someone and I'm like, I would put Roy instead of Slafkovský and start trying things. Then the guy told me, he's like, yeah, but you're gonna break the chemistry. Like they're doing well right now. Okay, yeah. Well, I got news for you. In 1 month, they're leaving for 6 months. You know, they're not gonna play for 6 months on the same line. So
it's not easy only with that. The chemistry. If you put a player on that line to replace another player for a game or two, I mean, you're trying to tell me that in two games from now, if they're back, that chemistry is not gonna rekindle. I mean, listen, if the playoffs were on the line, I would not break up lines right now, right? No. Because the chemistry is there, but they're not. Like you said, you really have nothing to lose because, let's be honest, each loss is not going to be the most terrible thing in the world either.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. You know?
Exactly.
No big deal. No big deal.
You like my first line now. You've been thinking about the future first line right now.
No, listen, I like it. It's just that Gordon and Hughes really see Kirby Dach as a number, as a centerman.
Yeah.
I think they like the prospect of having Dach back up Suzuki. Yeah.
You ask Byfield right now. You ask LA how they feel about putting Byfield on the wing.
They're happy.
Exactly. Big guy, too.
But because... Yeah, a lot of young players, too. It takes them a while to learn how to play center at the National Hockey League level. They've taken some responsibility off his shoulders, and he's playing a lot more free.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But once again, you know what? That's what they saw in their crystal ball by having Dach at center. But drafting a Caden Lindstrom can change all of that. Hey, right, you end up drafting a 6'4" centerman in the top five. Probably changes things.
If you get another skill center and you put him with Newhook and Caulfield, you get another good line. So obviously, it's time to test some stuff.
So you're moving. So you're not only thinking of moving Dach from center to wing. You're thinking of doing the same thing with Newhook.
I think he's a good. He could be good at both positions. You know, like it depends of the staff you have. But I'm just. Saying in a perfect world, Tony, just imagine 1 second, like speed on the wing with a good sound center and the size of Slafkovský and Dach with the strength of Suzuki. I don't see how you play against that line down low. I don't see how.
Yeah, I've always believed that changing positions is important and necessary. What are we talking about here?
I'm just thinking about players that could come. Okay. What about if your friend comes here, Zegras?
I said a comment that I'm looking at you, and it looks like you're thinking, "Oh my god!" Man.
I'm thinking about all the players. Wow. I'm building a solid lineup here tonight. Guys, if we keep going a few more minutes, we're going to win the cup next year.
if we do a combination of the Sick Podcast and Bleu Nuit, and we kind of make it like a hybrid show like that, that would be unbelievable. All right, okay. did you really bring up Zegras? We can stop talking about Zegras for now because he's probably going to be moved at the draft. So we still have time.
We'll wait.
Hey?
We'll wait. I don't want to talk about Zegras.
No, let's not talk about Zegras. Hey, Thursday night versus the Bruins.
It's going to be a big game.
It's always a fun night when the Bruins come to town. It's always a fun night. I've said this before on the podcast. I like Jim Montgomery a lot. A lot.
Yeah, very structured team.
Marty St. Louis has a very long career as head coach of the Montreal Canadiens. But let me tell you, one day I'd like to see Jim Montgomery coach the Montreal Canadiens.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you something. I don't think the Bruins are that good of a team. They're very well structured.
They overachieved.
Yeah, I think so. They finished first last year, and they're playing well again this year. And I think it showed in the playoff when they play better teams with more depth. Like, that's why they lost last year. But they're just well coached. I think that this is how well coached they are.
Yep. I agree with you 1,000%. I don't think Jim Montgomery is going to be overly comfortable going into the playoffs with Zacha and Coyle as his centerman. I mean, regular season is one thing. Yeah. Playoffs is the other. And playoffs, you end up going up against all those horses at center. And in the words of Peter from Coach St. Luke, teams that start double shifting their best players. And then all of a sudden, it's a different game and it's a different season. You're right. It's a different game and different season. Savard was good tonight, eh? Savard was good tonight.
Well, he's a good defenseman, man. He's a good veteran. And
yeah, he was good tonight.
I don't know. Honestly, I'm so confused with him. Like, I was ready to trade him if it was great value at trade deadline. And then he comes back and does the same thing, and you see he's happy. Like, what do you do next year? Like, you got to let him go. That's going to be a tough decision. You got to let him go. Because as good as he is, as good as a teammate as he is, and I know this type of game because I played the same type of game as a forward. When you block shot, you hit, and you do everything for the team. There's no going from 10 to 8 to 7. You go from 10 to 1. You know, this is how fast the drop is when you're a role player and your body quits on you. It's not, it's Gallagher style, you know?
Yeah. And isn't that something, Max, in game 64, if I can, you're not making the playoffs and Savard is sacrificing his body like the Canadians are playing in the Stanley Cup final?
Yeah.
No, but that's when you know that, you know what, when you wake up in the morning, you can look in the mirror and you can be proud of what you see. And 100%. You can be proud of what you are and who you are and what you stand for. And that's why there's a couple of players in the National Hockey League, and I bring up their names, who are these big bodies. They're very imposing. They have a certain skill set, and they play when they feel like it. Well, and for some, it's one in every five. For one, it's every six, every seven, every eight, every nine. It's shameful, man. And that's, you know, the NFL that has no guaranteed contracts, the NHL would be a much different league if there was no guaranteed contracts, because there's a lot of fat cats that are sitting on long-term contracts and they just end up giving 50%, not even.
Tony, and never I understood in my career as a player or after watching a hockey game, I will understand a guy that doesn't give his 200% every game. I don't care about injuries. I don't care about traveling. I don't care about pressure. You're making 5 to 10 million a year to work 18 to 20 minutes every 2 days. How can you come to the rink and play an okay game? Mistakes happen. I get it. Having a tough night, I get it. But we're not stupid in Montreal. We know when we see with our eyes if a guy is working hard or not. It doesn't make sense in my head, and I'm not trying to put on a show right now. It doesn't make sense. It's 20 minutes of work, Tony. There's people digging all day from 5 a.m. to midnight, and they make 50 grand, but they do it every day with a smile, and they bring coffee for everyone. It doesn't make sense in my head.
So for you, a game is work? Is practice work?
What?
Practice, is it work? So you just said guys are working 18 to 20 minutes a game.
Yeah.
At practice, would you consider that work or fun?
Fun.
Wow.
It's the NHL, Tony. It's the NHL. You're paid for it. And I'm not saying guys don't deserve their money, but at one point you got to look in the mirror and say, that's my life, man. I'm lucky. I'm driving to Bell Center or whatever building in the NHL. It's unacceptable to not be 100% every game. Your effort, I mean, not your performance. It's okay. You're gonna do turnovers and you're gonna do bad stuff, but your effort, unbelievable if you do it to your teammates and to the fans. I will never understand this type of personality. Impossible.
How many times were you a healthy scratch in your career?
Three.
Were you?
Three games.
Three times.
Three games for one game. And it was not a healthy scratch, like saying we don't like your game or the way you work. It was like, okay, you've had like two or three tough games, like with the puck or the way, like decisions, and just a little break will help you.
Wow. They were not three consecutive games.
No. One game and back. That's it.
One game and back.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay. And the three games happened with which teams?
I had one game in St. Louis. It was Ken Hitchcock, so obviously that's that's just normal for him. Yeah. Then maybe one game with Montreal. Never happened in Vancouver, that's for sure. Never happened in Anaheim. Maybe twice in Montreal at a young age. That's it.
You ended up making the National Hockey League at what age?
20. Tony, I'll tell you something, okay? And I'm obviously not here to talk about myself, but you can make the phone call because, you know, sometimes it's important to go to the source. I trained with Scott Livingston. That was the Montreal Canadian strength coach, right? He's
a good friend of mine.
Yeah, I was training at his gym near Atwater Market.
Yeah.
Call him, and I'm honest, I never miss one day in my whole career. Never have missed one training.
I believe you.
Never happened. I woke up a morning. Like, you got to realize how lucky you are, like, just to be healthy in life. Like, you play in the NHL, I'm not going to miss a training. Trust me. Did I go train hangover? Yes, I did a few times, for sure. But I never arrived late either.
Yeah. So, Scott Livingston, obviously, is one of the best. Another one who's in a very, very elite category, of course, is Paul Gagné.
Yep.
And Paul Gagné trains a lot of NHLers, athletes as well. Paul Gagné lives in LaSalle. He doesn't live too far from me. And in the off season, in the summer, he either has the guys running on LaSalle Boulevard and working out, or if it's a rainy day, they meet in Verdun and it's covered and they do all their workouts over there. And I'll tell you this. There's several NHLers that work out with him. And there's one who's extremely talented who shows up a couple of times a year, who's supposed to be there every day like everyone else, who probably won't, you know, throughout the entire summer is there for three trainings instead of 50.
Well,
or 40 or whatever it is. I mean, I don't know what the number is. I don't know.
Come and call me in a few years, see how long his career lasts. That's it.
Yeah, and you're right, but that's when you look after at some careers and you say, he had a lot of success. He had some success. He didn't have any success. He should have had a lot more success than he did. And you start asking why. There's reasons for this.
Yeah.
The ones that work are the ones that will end up playing longer, prolonging their career, making more money, you would think. And the ones who don't work very hard, it catches up to you. Yeah. It catches up to you.
And that's the biggest thing. It's tough to make young people understand that, because you only can understand later. I have so many friends, Tony, they were way better than me, you know, like, and they were making fun of me when I was jogging at 5 a.m. All these guys, they call me back and they're like, you know what? I'm going to say it now that I'm a dad or whatever. Like, I regret it. Because we had you next door and we were making fun of you instead of following you. It's not funny anymore. And I wish I could talk to every single 15-year-old, 16-year-old, 17-year-old kid so they understand that.
Waking up at 5 o'clock in the morning, that always came from you?
100%.
100%. And that's the difference.
My mom never pushed me.
If you have to tell your kid or pick them up and drag them to the gym, or, you know, forget it. If it doesn't come from them, it's not going to happen.
You know what? My parents never pushed me, but they always led by example in the work ethic department. My mom was the hardest worker and my dad the same thing. But my dad would say things. I would watch him because we had no money, and I would watch him fix the car under the car. It was minus 40. He would come out and show his head and say, is this what you want to do your whole life? Then go work, go jog, and get ready for your hockey career. And then they always it would sink in, like you're like, well, he's right. I gotta go. So yeah, it comes from your surroundings. You need good coaches, good family, good friends, because then so many talents are lost, you know. Like it's important what you say to young people in the hockey world or athletes, because it stays here, you know? It stays here. So they need to understand at an early age.
Bobby Design, Max is your best Habs hockey analyst. In my opinion, don't lose this guy at the Sick Podcast with Tony Marinaro. I'm trying not to.
Thank you, sir.
As a matter of fact, before the show, we were in negotiations, and Yellow was trying to make his best offer for Max, but we weren't able to ink him to a long-term deal yet. But I think it's going to happen. Hey, Jose says that she misses when we answer some questions. Max, you feel like sticking around for just 5-10 more minutes? We'll just answer some questions.
I got absolutely nothing to do right now.
All right. Okay. Thank you very much. All right. Okay. Hey, Agnello, Sammy, Juliana, Master Control. Why don't you bring up some questions? La Belle Jose, I don't want to let her down. I also miss Tony Marinaro interacting with the people and answering questions from the chat. Let's go. Throw your questions out there. We're going to answer them. Lindsay Belair says, yes, the last 15 minutes would be cool. Okay. Let's go for it. Let's go right now.
Yep. What are we doing?
Gilles Lapointe, Max, who's your favorite coach?
Alain Vigneault. You know what? Alain Vigneault was a good coach for me. I had him in juniors, in PEI. I had him in Vancouver, gave me a tryout with the Rangers. But when I look back at my career, I had a midget AAA coach and one junior coach. Midget AAA was André Tourigny. And junior was Alain Vigneault. So there it is. This is how you learn how to play hockey. Two unbelievable coaches.
Oh, yeah. Tourigny was unbelievable. Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
I think he's going to end up coaching the Canadiens too one day.
Absolutely. 100%.
I believe that.
Yeah.
That all right. Coach. Okay. Next question. I bet you your least favorite coach was Hitchcock.
Actually, no. I didn't like him, but every time I had a tough game in my life after, I was always coming back to what would Hitch say, you know, because at the end of the day, it was right. It's just the delivery of the message was wrong.
Rem says, what would you say to Anderson as a teammate?
Oof, that's it. Honestly,
if you're in that locker room, and you were who you were, third liner, fourth liner, would you be able to pull Josh Anderson aside and say something to him? And if so, would it be a
the way I was sending messages? And honestly, I consider myself lucky because the guys were respecting me. I would just be so hard on him in practice. Let's say there was a one-on-one situation or a 3-on-3 down low, he would understand that I'm sending a message. I'm not saying I would fight or hit, but I would be so intense to make him understand this is how intense you need to be. Until at one point he turns around and what's the problem? He's like, this is all we need to play, man. We're a team here. Let's go. Like, you don't need to destroy him or be negative, but he needs to understand, because there's also the respect of a veteran, you know, like he worked hard, he worked hard to get there. So, but I'm not shy to get to the level of saying to a superstar that, hey man, like, what are you doing? I've never been shy of doing this.
Drum Dude 74 is asking a question, which, you know, I don't know where this one's coming from. Who wins an arm wrestling match, Tony or Max? That's a very, very easy answer. I can guarantee you that Max would win. I'm not a wrestler. I'm a lover. Okay. Jose Levesque, how do you think Primo will perform under pressure when it really counts, Max?
Oof. I don't know. But Jose, I think he looks like a pretty calm kid. Like, he looks... Like, his attitude reminds me of Carey's attitude. He's just there in net looking up, and he doesn't look stressed out. So probably will perform at the right way.
Others, do you think Armia has actually hit his ceiling? This coming from Jeremy Sentner. I think this guy could actually hit over 20. Max, Yoel Armia has been in the National Hockey League for quite some time. Yep. Does he still have a ceiling that he hasn't got to? Or is the last month of Armia actually been his ceiling?
I think he didn't reach his happiness ceiling. And I think that they is going to have the right line for him, and he's happy, perfectly happy in the situation we're going to give him. I think he's going to be able to perform to a certain level within his standards, but it's his tools. But I think he's a good player. He's a big guy with good hands. He's smart defensively. I think if you put him in a good team and he's got a role that he likes, I think he's going to do way better.
Gilles Laplante says, Max de Quito, Mayor Cochambrar, your best roommate on the road in the National Hockey League was?
Oh, I had a few good ones, but obviously Guillaume was my roommate, is a great friend for so many years. So, and it's always special to start your NHL career with somebody your age, you know, because it's a big world there. When you open the door, you're proud to play for the Montreal Canadiens, but it's intimidating and it's stressful. And to have a buddy to go through this together, it's special.
What was your favorite city to travel in the NHL?
I always liked Dallas. I think Dallas is a good city, good hockey teams. I mean, obviously, yeah. there's all New York, LA, the special cities like that. I wish I would have played against Vegas once in my life, but I guess it's not going to happen.
I know you love it there. I think you told me you want to retire there one day. Boston's nice, too.
Boston is nice. I mean, I played in Boston, man, in the playoffs, in the Stanley Cup Finals, and it was so loud. Great crowd there. This is what you want from sports, right? You want passion. You want, like, man, it was special.
How many of your buddies, Montreal Canadiens fans, called you back then and said, I hope you really beat these guys in the final? Nobody wanted. There's a lot of people in Montreal didn't want to see the Bruins win that cup in 2011.
I mean, if you have to lose in the Stanley Cup Finals, the worst way possible would be a Game 7 at home against the Boston Bruins for a Montreal kid. I don't see how it can get worse than that.
All right, okay. Let's get to more of them. This one coming in from...
For people wondering, I got a mic stand. It's just I don't like it.
You don't like it, eh? I don't know how you're holding that mic the whole time. George Liaros. Well, Marty St. Louis. There we go. Yeah. Oh, that's the Blue Yeti. That's the Yeti, right?
Yeah.
I got one of those.
You know what, Tony? Can I answer a question before the George question?
Yes.
There's Pierre Alex. He's asking, "Qu'est-ce que tu penses? What are you thinking about Liam Greentree versus Caden Lindstrom? Who are you picking?" Okay. There's something I need to say because it's been, you know, there's a lot of people that look at stats and the rankings and all that, and they give their opinion on the young prospect.
Mm-hmm.
That sometimes I feel like it's such. I'm sorry, but it's bullshit. Because the scouts, they watch 200 games on each player. They talk with them. They call their families, and they do a report. Don't analyze a player because you watch one period or five games. I'm not going to come here in front of this camera and lie, saying I don't know one kid about the next draft. Because I cannot analyze a guy by watching one highlights. So sometimes be careful of what you're hearing. There's some specialists. Obviously, there's some good people that do their job and what they're saying is right. But I'm not going to come here and say I know anything about the players because I'm not going to watch every single game of Celebrini and call his mom or dad and know what kind of kid is he. I'm not going to do that. Impossible.
I'm happy you said that. I've said this before, okay? Pierre Maguire goes out and he watches a lot of collegiate games. NCAA games.
Yep.
Grant McCagg watches a lot of games in the Ottawa area, will come down to Montreal every now and then, watch a lot on tape.
Yep.
Craig Button, who's TSN's director of scouting in their hockey channel, he goes out and he watches a lot. There's other members of the media who just see some of these kids in tournaments like the World Juniors, right? But for the most part, and I've said this before on the podcast, full-time members of the media who are either like myself doing a Montreal Canadiens podcast. We're on Monday to Friday at 10 p.m. Okay. We're working for a newspaper or radio or television, or you're on the beat and you're following the team around every day. These members of the media who pretend to know all of these prospects, it's bullshit. It's bullshit. When do they have time to go watch these kids. You can watch them on tape every now and then. Okay, maybe. But they're not going out. And then the next day they're talking to you about what happened to the National Hockey League. How did you do both at the same time? You're not. So, you know, I'll tell you when I watch a young kid play, if I see a young kid play a lot, I'll tell you. But for the most part, I don't get out to games in the queue and watch. When do you want me to go? I work Monday to Thursday. Sometimes I work Fridays as well. And I got to be totally honest. When I'm off on Saturdays, I watch the game, or I'll watch a CF Montreal game. I'll watch the Habs game. And then the rest of the time, I dedicate to my wife, my family, my friends, whatever. I'm not going out to scout games. And by the way, very, very few members of the media do. Very few. The ones who pretend to know everything about the prospects and the draft and this and that, whatever. If they're not actually independent scouts, 99% of the time, it's all bullshit. They read a couple of articles, they see one or two highlights, and all of a sudden, an opinion is formulated. Good for you for saying it, by the way. I thought I was the only one who was saying it, and I'm happy you said it. You know? Happy you said it.
It's not that simple to know where a 16, 17-year-old would end up when he's 25. There's no magic there. It's about spending time.
Only because she's my favorite. I'm going to go back to her. José Lévesque, Max, penses-tu que le Canadien va racheter le contrat de Gallagher à un certain point?
He's got 6 years left, 5 years?
He's got 3 years left after this year at 6.5.
Oh. No, I don't think so. I don't think so because this is going to be time with when the team is ready to contend. So not contend, but they're going to have a great playoff team, I think, is in 3 years. So they're going to be patient. There's no point. I think I don't know how you calculate that, but I know you're going to have to pay him for a lot of years. So, no, there's no point doing it right now.
Olivier Giroux, Max, do you own some of your rookie cards?
No, I got maybe one somewhere in the house. Probably one of my youngest. Probably my youngest grabbed it and they draw a mustache on it. And then they put a princess dress on it and they ripped it. So no, I don't know where it is.
All right. Okay. We're going to go with one more if we can. One more. And Yellow Sammy Juliana just surprised me. Bring it up. Max, how much did the rookie dinner cost you? This coming in from Gilles Laplante for our final question of the night.
Good question. I know it was expensive because it was in New York. So it was me, Guillaume, and Alak together. So we split all together. I don't remember. I would say somewhere between 6,000 and 8,000. I think. I don't remember.
You split 8,000?
No, each.
Each.
Yeah.
Wow. So anywhere between 18 to 24 G's.
I think
the bill.
I think so. Honestly, wow. It's been a while, man. Sorry, Jill.
So that was how many paychecks did you how many paychecks have you deposited before you had to pay that?
Max one, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, I remember because...
The money was there.
No, it wasn't the first paycheck because I remember I had to call my mom and she said, just borrow a veteran's credit card and pay him back when it's time. So I don't remember who it was. So yeah, it's blurry in my head. Really? It's been a while. Yeah. No, so it wasn't after a big paycheck or anything.
Wow. Isn't that something? All right. Okay, Max, it's amazing. I told you, I think we have a pretty amazing chemistry. Yeah. And judging by some of the comments, I think a lot of people agree. I like you so much. I think you like me so much that we're going to do it again tomorrow night, this time only on your platform, is La Poche Bleue, La Taverne Hockey segment. La Poche Bleue goes usually on Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. on YouTube and on all platforms, unless, of course, the Montreal Canadiens play on Wednesday, and then they'll choose another day, either be a Tuesday or a Thursday or whatever. So it goes tomorrow night at 8 p.m., and I think La Taverne Hockey segment starts at around 8:20 p.m.
Exactly. The Tony Show.
Who am I going to be on with?
Jean Perron, that's for sure, always.
Right. All right. Johnny Boy.
Pascal Leclerc, and working on someone else right now.
So myself, Jean Perron, and Pascal Leclerc, and someone else. Pascal Smart Leclerc, people. By the way, had amazing stats under Ken Hitchcock. with the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Great system for a goaltender, that's for sure, 100%.
I think it was LeClaire and Mason. Was it not Mason?
Probably.
Their stats were unbelievable.
Yeah.
Stats were unbelievable.
He's a good guy.
Max, merci beaucoup.
Thanks,
we'll do it again tomorrow night, same time, same place. It's me that thanks you. Once again, guys. I also want to thank I want to thank Energy Transportation Group. I want to thank La Bita TV. I want to thank Playground. And I want to thank Accent Insurance Solutions. I want to give you the Accent Insurance Solution moment of the game. For me, it's the first period. Let's get to it.
Accent Insurance moment of the game.
What am I talking about? For me, it's Caden Primo. The Montreal Canadiens are outshot 22-8 in period number one. Primo stops all of them. As a matter of fact, he went on to stop the other 19 total for period two and period three to make it 41 on the night. The Canadiens beat the Columbus Blue Jackets by a score of 3-0. The Accent Insurance Solution moment of the game has to be Caden Primo's first period standing on his head, paving the way, a 3-0 lead. There was going to be no catching up for the Columbus Blue Jackets. Canadiens shut out Columbus by a score of 3-0. That's it for us. Thank you so much. If you liked it, like it, share it with your friends. Comment SICK, S-I-C-K, S-I-C-K. Leave us a 5-star review on Apple. We need to start getting more of those. And start telling your friends about it so they can start subscribing to our YouTube channel. It's absolutely free. The more, the merrier. We want more subscribers. Come on, let's go. To you, my SICK army, to you, my SICK community, thank you so much for all the engagement, all the texting, all the chatting, and everything throughout the night, and even a couple of laughs. Special thanks to Max LaPierre and Agnello, Sammy, and Juliana Cavallaro at Master Control. I'm Marinaro. Have a good night. Tomorrow night, same time, same place. We'll be here. My guest will be Craig Button. Talk to you then.
And that's a wrap. Hope you don't miss us too much until next time. Follow the SICK Podcast with Tony Marinaro on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, Google Play, and Apple Podcasts. The SICK Podcast is brought to you by Energy Transportation Group. Driven to be different. La Vida TV. Embrace your true nature. And Playground, your premier gaming destination.